I'm Colin Lester, the chairman and the CEO of Gem Music Group, based in Willesden, West London. I've been in the music industry for 35 years. I believe you are only ever 3 minutes away from changing your whole life. And for me, the definition of success is being able to live in the moment.
You were nominated for Manager of the Year 2017. What goes into being a good manager?
It's a very broad question. So
we have time.
What goes in? Loads of things. I mean, but I think clearly the most important is a love of music and a respect of music. So if you respect music, mm-hmm. you respect artists. And I think ultimately the job itself is quite based on common sense. You don't have to be a rocket science to work it out, but you have to love music. You have to be, you know, into it. You have to believe in people. You have to have beliefs. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, you need to be a control freak, because as a manager, you are controlling the playing field. So I always say, if I don't know about it, it's not happening.
What's your sort of average day like?
My average day is pretty much get up.
What time?
About 7 o'clock. Mm. Do my emails. Look at the overnight emails, check out what's going on, have a cup of coffee, have a shower, come to the office, carry on, meetings, go to a studio, or I have a studio here, so go next door, or to my other studio next door, and carry on working, get home, have some dinner, get back on the emails.
Really?
Absolutely.
What time do you switch off your phone, ever?
Well, I don't really consider it work, it's a way of life.
Right.
So, you know, the best way to explain it is we work in real time. Mm. So there are things that will happen in real time that will be useless by tomorrow. Mm. So I might get a call about something going in the newspaper, an interview or a TV for tomorrow or the next day, and the moment will pass. So you are living in real time. And yes, I have lots of people that work with me that can deal with it as well. Yeah. But, you know, you're part of a team. So it's very, very, it's very in the moment. Certain parts of the job are very in the moment. Therefore, it's a way of life.
So you can't really switch off?
No, I don't really switch off, no. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure if I switched off, I wouldn't be bored shitless. I think I would be. Yeah. I love what I do.
And so you've been doing this for 35 years now?
Yes.
How has your role as a manager changed over the past 35 years?
The industry's changed to a degree, not to as much a degree as everyone thinks it has, because ultimately, I don't think the music business has changed.
Yeah, you said good record plus radio equals successful song.
You got it.
Okay, I feel like I hear bad songs on the radio.
Yeah, but you see, that's subjective. But no, it's subjective insofar as it's the industry hasn't changed.
Right.
It's still about songs. It's about great songs. That's the point of what I'm saying. You know, there's one letter, and it's a very big letter, between shit and hit. Mm. Right? And that letter is huge, okay?
You need that on a t-shirt.
Well, there you go. So you could print it and then pay me the royalty for a change. Oh. But I think that the industry, e-commerce is in every single business.
Yeah.
It's not just about, everyone seems to think, oh God, the music business has changed. It's not just the music business. The commercial side of it has changed in every single business that exists.
Mm.
So the music industry isn't unrecognizable. Actually, commerce is unrecognizable to what it was. So actually the music industry, the thing that is still crucial and still the most valuable part is the commodity of what you release, which is the song. It's the song, it's the record, it's the ability to be able to still write great songs, still perform live, sell tickets. Mm. You know, that's never going to change.
Mm.
Of course, the way that we sell records, the way the charts are
yeah, you I know, need to ask you about that.
Yeah, everything's, okay, so you do need to ask me about that, because
I'm no, I just, I know that Ed Sheeran had four songs in the UK top 20 this year at once, and I just wanted to know how that's going to change and what's wrong with that and how that has even come to be. I don't really understand, but I know something's wrong with that.
The Ed Sheeran situation, really, you know, because of streaming,
yeah,
and because streaming now goes towards the chart,
yeah,
it's actually, again, down to the consumer, which has always been down to the consumer. You know, you could have put out seven singles at the same time,
yeah,
and people could have bought seven singles, you and put you 1 to 7. So, again, it's not a completely new notion that, oh, my God, how do you have so many records in the chart? I mean, other artists have had it in the past, not quite the same as Ed Sheeran, granted. Yeah. The most important thing is that, ultimately, is it a good or a bad thing? Right, I don't know. And does it really matter?
Mm.
To me, not really. It does devalue the singles chart. Okay, and that, is that a problem? To me personally, not really, because, you know, it's something that people like. It's a passing time. You know, a single is something, it's a time and a place.
Mm.
An album is a body of work that moves your career forward. So singles are singles and albums are albums. So is there a value on the singles chart? I guess so. If it didn't exist, would it bother me? No.
Mm.
If there weren't albums, absolutely. Then we would be making great music.
What is it? Was it 150 streams of a song counts as one single sold, one copy sold or something? They've changed it now recently.
They've recently changed it to then weight it on the way down. So your streaming's not the same as it's going down the chart. So they're trying to slow it down,
right,
so you don't have that amount. But, you know, does it matter? I don't think so. I think that ultimately, if you make great records, you make great music and people want to hear it,
mm,
whether it's Ed Sheeran or whether it's your new album that, mm-hmm, I can't wait to hear.
It's really good, honestly. Yeah, well, no, I'm looking, I'm really... It's just one track that's going to blow your mind.
Well, no, I love... Well, that's the title, isn't it? Blow Your Mind.
Yeah, well, no, that's my album. The track is Chicken Teriyaki.
Yeah, I think the problem
really
with that
tasty.
Is... Yeah, I'm going to sue you.
Why?
Because I wrote that.
Have you sued anyone?
Yes, and I've been sued.
Have you?
It's wonderful. I love that.
I'm guessing
I love that.
We can't talk about it.
You can talk about anything you
what
want.
What did you do, Colin?
I've been sued over the past, but you know, they...
This is how you know you're successful.
But it's
someone
a great thing.
Sued
of course,
you.
It's a great thing to
no
get sued.
No one's ever going to sue me.
I love that. When I grew up, I heard someone say once, with every hit, there's a writ. And I thought, oh, I'll take
t-shirt.
The writ. Give me the writ, you know?
Wow.
Another T-shirt. Yeah. You should be in merchandise.
I don't want to get sued from you, so I can't put that on a T-shirt.
I don't think that suing people is a good thing, though. I think that litigation is a very, very sad demise of any relationship or any contract. So I would never advise litigation at any point. But if people fuck with you, then, you know, you have to resolve it in some way. And I guess legally is the best way.
Well, you know, in Andy's episode, he said you don't have to be a wanker to be in the music industry.
Mm.
Have you been one at times?
I think I am a wanker a lot of the time. But I think that, you know... I don't care if I don't get invited to people's garden parties.
Yeah.
I do the job because I represent my artists, I represent the company, I represent the team, and part of the team, you know, of my company.
Mm.
And that's what's important to me.
Mm.
If I don't get invited to someone's dinner party or garden party because I'm a wanker,
mm,
for doing something that upsets them, then so be it. It's the job. But you don't have to be a wanker, but sometimes you do. If you know what I mean. Does that make sense?
I think that applies to life in general.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, you know, and so I think ultimately it's why are you being a wanker should be the question.
Okay, sure.
You know, have you ever been a wanker knowingly on purpose should
yeah,
be
I
the
have
question.
Bad days.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. What are some of the challenges you face in your job?
Some of the challenges in my job,
yeah.
What are some of them I tell you?
Yeah. What stresses you out? What keeps you up at night?
Everything keeps me up at night.
Really?
Yeah,
like
everything.
Global warming and stuff?
Well, not really, no. Global warming doesn't actually keep me up. You maybe, you know, it's interesting. I'm allowed to think about it. Not that I'm anti, you know, the Green Party, but no, it's not.
Let's
really...
just not go down that route.
No, but you can go down it, but...
Don't want to.
You know, no, I'm that's not really what keeps me up at night. What keeps me up at night is the continuation of being able to build something you've started.
Right.
Because for me, as an entrepreneur and as someone that's worked in various areas of the business, but they've always been with artists and always been under the banner of sort of management label, whatever it's been, I have to feel that I can win the lottery. I have to feel that I can ultimately, you know, there's a dream and that I can smash it. And if I don't, if I come to work every day and think, oh, you know what, I'm just going to go through the motions,
yeah,
I would give up.
How do you keep motivated with your job?
Motivation, if you play me an amazing song or an amazing act, that for me motivates me more than anything else. You know, putting family aside, putting sex aside, for me, the most exciting things, and maybe
food.
Football as well.
But food?
No, but we're going to put food below this one, but we're going to keep football as part of maybe family and sex, even putting sex aside.
I don't know how your wife would
now
feel
let's
that.
See this then. So we're just going to put family aside.
Okay.
The thing that can most excite me is hearing an amazing song. That will be my number one excitement of the day.
Mm.
And then that will inspire me. That's what inspires me. Artists inspire me.
Mm.
People inspire me. You know, I'm inspired by other people, and I think that I'm very, very, I'm very interested in people. I'm interested, everyone's got a story.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if you listen to their story,
mm,
it's very rarely the headline that's the story.
What is your story in one sentence?
I haven't got one.
Come on. You just said you're all about stories.
No, what is my story?
Yeah, just what's you? What's your blurb?
That's a really hard question.
What's it going to say on a tombstone? Didn't mean that.
No, what's it going to say on my tombstone?
Not a wanker. Well, sometimes. Don't sue me.
No,
you can't.
told you I was ill.
Nice.
It was the old one. But, you know, the old ones aren't the best. I think that... What's the question?
What's your blurb? What's your story? What's your one sentence?
I don't have one
up
sentence.
Your life?
You can't sum my life up in one sentence. I think that... You know, what is my life? It's not. I'm in the now. We're here now.
Mm.
This is the present, okay? Yesterday's history.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow's a mystery. This is the present.
That's why they call it a gift.
Absolutely.
Talking about the past, do you have any regrets?
No, I don't have any regrets at all.
What about this quote I have from you, which is, I fucked up some people's careers along the way.
Did I say that?
You did, yeah.
Well,
I don't remember saying it.
You know what? I think that I was probably trying to be a little bit over bravado, sort of, you know. I don't think I've ever knowingly fucked up anyone's careers, because that would make me a very powerful person to think that me individually can fuck up your career.
Mm.
So I don't think I've ever fucked up people's careers. I think that I've probably not done certain things in my early days as a manager that may have changed the direction of a band or an artist, but ultimately, it's about the music. It's not about me.
Do you believe in failure?
No, failure is not an option.
Do you believe in luck?
I believe you make your own luck, and the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Oh, I love that. What about this quote from you about you can change? You're only 3 minutes away from changing your whole life.
Absolutely. If you write a hit song right now and release it. That's 3 minutes that you've written of something that doesn't exist, put it out, it's a huge hit, suddenly you are a superstar. Now your life has changed, you're wanted on every single TV station, they're sending cars for you, albeit they're going to be Anglias maybe at the beginning, and then you'll progress yourself maybe to Ford Fiesta, you know, and then from a Ford Fiesta, you know, but they will send cars for you, and you'll get used to that, and then you'll turn left on the plane, and everything's changed in your life.
I lost you at the Fiesta.
Well, you know, the Fiestas are great. I had a Ford Fiesta. Great
really?
Car.
I can't
great.
Drive.
No, well then you're going to be...
We're different
you're
people,
a cheap
Colin.
Date. You're a cheap date.
I'm so cheap, it's unreal.
No, a cheap date. Don't put yourself down like that.
No, I'm really expensive in life. Cheap date.
Yeah.
Easy to please. What am I going to ask you? What's the most important thing you've learnt about the record business?
The most important thing I've learnt about the record business is there are no rules. Follow your instinct and make sure at the end of the day you are very, very convinced that you've done the right thing by the people you represent and your company. And that's the key, really, in life, is that you can only ever do your best. You can do the best with what you've got. But the key for me, really, is you have to be solid. You have to be a believer.
Mm.
And the worst culture that exists in life is blame. I have a no-blame culture. So that would answer your question, really. Blame is the most negative of all of our feelings. So any time you blame somebody, it's a negative, you're putting out a negative vibe. So I have something called the Skelka factor. Now, what is the Skelka factor? The Skelka factor.
Skelka.
Factor.
Factor.
Skelka factor.
Okay.
Mr. Skelka was the headmaster of my children's school.
Okay.
And the Skelka factor is very simple. Now, I could go and see Mr. Skelka and say, Mr. Skelka, I'm really sorry I can't pay the fees this month, right? But you know what? The record company are shit. The marketing, crap. And oh my God, that guy that did the radio promotion, what a wanker, as we were discussing.
Yeah.
And I can't believe how shit, I mean, really, it's just ridiculous. Anyway, the song was amazing. And anyway, next month, I'm going to see if I can get a better record company, and he's going to say to me, Mr. Lester, or wanker, whatever he wants to call me, you're a very nice man, right? Go and get your kids and take them out of school.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is there's no point in me blaming all these people, because actually everyone that I've just blamed, I had the chance at the beginning to change. I could have gone to a different record company. I could have had different pluggers, different marketing people. I had a say in all of that. So why blame people? So if you work from the basis that there is a no blame culture, it comes from you in the beginning, and therefore, if you blame anyone, you're going to blame yourself, okay, for making the wrong decisions. But is that really blame, or is that inexperience, or just I haven't done the job very well?
I feel like you're very spiritual. Like you spend a lot of time like introspecting. Is that a word?
Introspecting is a lovely
quite
word.
Quite introspective, I feel. Like you self-analyse. Are you proud of yourself?
That's a great question. Yes. I'm proud of, yes.
Is this what you had envisioned? Have you sort of reached and then surpassed your goal?
I haven't even got close to it yet.
Really? What's the goal?
The goal is doing the same, but for the entire time of my life. And hopefully I'm nowhere near the end of my life. So the fact that I've been in this industry literally since I left school was what I wanted to achieve. And I have done, so I haven't got there yet because I'm still alive and well, thankfully.
Does the idea of retiring really freak you out?
It doesn't freak me out, it's just never going to happen.
I like your positivity. Do you ever doubt yourself?
I think everyone has a certain amount of doubt. Anyone that says they don't ever doubt themselves are either fucking stupid because they'll jump head first and then think about what they did afterwards. Or get it wrong. So not that often. So I would say that I am more considered sometimes. But, I think that I try not to doubt myself now. I'm a confident person.
I need to do more of that. Do you want to talk? Yeah.
Act the part and you become the part. So
blagging.
No, it's very different. Blagging's not the same, actually, but blagging is actually a very good asset to have.
Yeah, thank you.
In life, not about in management. You know, blagging is way up there.
Okay.
I mean, even when I get hustled or blagged, I actually respect.
Yeah, I
respect being blagged. You know, if someone hustles me or sells me something I don't really want,
and
I respect them.
I know what you're saying.
I respect that.
Yeah. What's your biggest life lesson?
My biggest life lesson, or translated into my sort of simplicity, is the thing that I've learnt in life is that the most precious thing we have is time. And had you asked me that years ago, I probably would have said, and most people will still probably say, health. However, actually time trumps everything, because, you know, time is a commodity that you can't buy. It doesn't matter how much money you've got. You know, as the Stones said, time waits for nobody. or no man, as they said. But it does. You can't get it back. With time, you can get your health back. You know, you can steal my watch, okay, and I can go and buy another watch. But you steal my time, I'll never get that back. So my biggest hatred are time thieves. And they're people that actually try and get you to do something that they can do themselves. They're stealing your time.
You're so deep.
But that's so not deep. True. That is like, you can steal my watch, I'll buy another one, like right? You steal my time, you're I can right. never buy that back. And actually, if I'm not well, which hopefully I will be well, but if I'm not, without time, I can't recover. But if you told me I'm ill, but I've got time, I can recover. So my biggest life lesson is that time is the most valuable commodity that we have.
If you could go back in time and do anything differently, what would you do?
I actually would cut out people that waste my time quicker.
Is there a formula for success? If there is, can I have it?
Yes, there is a formula for success.
Okay.
But I don't have any idea what it is, because you only understand it when you've got there. And then when you're successful, you endeavour to be more successful.
How would you define success?
Inner self-belief and happiness.
Was there a moment when you sort of realised, oh, this is success,
no.
successful?
No, I don't think you ever realise it, because you're always chasing the next thing.
What has having money taught you?
The more money you have, the more money you need.
You have a Bentley?
I have quite a few cars.
What do I have to do to get a Bentley?
There's the keys. You have to just take it.
I can't try.
It doesn't solve anything. It doesn't change anything, because we all really need to learn to live in the now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, enjoy the moment. But we're not. We're thinking about, you know, and guess what? If I could, is there any regrets I have in life? No, but do I wish for anything? I wish I could learn to live in the moment more and enjoy things in the moment, because we don't. We're always thinking about, oh my God, you know, I need to. If you've had a number one record, you worry about the next one's got to be number one. And if you've got a Bentley, then you want to buy the Ferrari or whatever else it is, you know. So if I had anything that I wished I could do better in my life, it would be to live in the moment.
Fill Me In made Craig David the youngest male solo artist ever to achieve a number one single. And obviously he's gone on to have like immense success. How did that come about? How did you discover Craig?
I heard a record on a pirate station called Lush. It was a song called Rewind. And I thought it was an absolutely amazing track. And what really endeared me to it was that it slowed down in the chorus, because pop records don't slow down in the chorus, or records generally don't, certainly radio records, they speed up. And you know, you have this big formula where you have, you know, verse, chorus, verse, middle eight, blah, whatever it is. And this broke the rules. It sort of came down in the chorus. And I loved this guy who was singing, you know, Craig David all over my boink. And I thought, wow, I absolutely love that. That guy's great. And it was him that I was interested in. And I did a little bit of research and managed to find his manager. I had a record label at the time called Wildstar Records. And I managed to find his manager and then managed to convince him and Craig to sign to my little record label where there were other labels all trying to sign him. And I remember him coming into my office, having just been to Sony, and I'm thinking, well, I know the Sony reception's got all these wonderful TVs and it's all very cool. And mine looked like, you know, sort of, if you could imagine a minicab office. We were a big open plan office with phones and leads and wires and tables, you know, big open plan. And I'm thinking, this isn't going to be that impressive. But ultimately, Craig is a very intelligent guy, not intelligent for signing to me. He's not impressed by material things. He never has been. And he's taught me a lot about that. He's taught me, you know, I've learned from Craig. He's been, it's great managing Craig, and he's a friend as well as someone that I manage. And you know, we have a great friendship that I am very, very lucky to have. And so he's always been a thinking person, you know, and I've been very, very fortunate to have managed a lot of artists that do think in sort of, you know, slightly left of centre, but, you know, also traditional ways. And Craig has taught me a lot as well about, you know, lateral thinking. So he played me a song when he came in called Walking Away. And also on that same, on the same cassette was another song called Cocoa Butter. And it was an absolute piece of shit. But I don't want to, no, you don't know it because you've never heard it. But in the Big Nasty, I was actually telling Nasty, Mr. Nasty to you, but I was telling him about the story about this song, Cocoa Butter. Mm. And he actually put that in his rap in when the bass line drops.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and like I just told him and then left the studio, and then the next day he mentioned Cocoa Butter in it.
So it never made the album.
But it never made the album. Okay. And he also had a cover on that cassette of Human. I'm only human. Maybe. Right? A bit young for you. But Walking Away for me, for someone at 17 or 16 when he wrote that, to say, I'm walking away from the troubles in my life, I'm walking away trying to find a better day, for me, told me that this guy is special. Mm. You know, you don't write those words if you're not. You don't write, you know, very few 16-year-olds are going to write that.
Yeah.
And of course, then the great thing about Craig is when I showcased him for my record label, brought in all the people, and his showcase went completely wrong. That machine broke up, it chewed the DAT up, and it all went complete. I mean, if it couldn't have gone worse.
Yeah.
And when it all stopped, he started freestyling. And there was no music, nothing else was going on. Here's this kid, you know, 18, he's got a bunch of people, you know, in the room, and he started freestyling. And that was the moment I thought, I'm going to sign this guy, whatever happens. He's absolutely... It was actually when it went wrong.
Mm.
And it's interesting because recently... I think it was at V Festival that when he started his TS5 set, there was a problem with the technical side of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think he did the first 7 minutes completely freestyle,
wow,
a cappella, and nobody knew about it. I think I read someone saying, wasn't it great to see Craig working without it? Well, he couldn't actually work with anything because there was a technical issue. And that's how talented he is. And it just reminded me, and I spoke to him about it, I said, it's so funny that here you are all these years later, yeah, in front of thousands of people,
yeah,
doing exactly what you did that impressed the shit out of me when you were literally, you know, 18 years old.
It reminds me that when I was reading about you, you were saying that in the years that Craig went a bit MIA, he never stopped. He was writing songs the entire time. He continued being in the studio the entire time.
Continuously wrote songs. Yeah. He wrote songs. Some of them were angry. Some of them were bitter, some of them were hardcore club, some of them were good.
Yeah.
But as a manager, you know, I always helped to, you know, I was, my role was to continuously try and inspire him,
yeah,
and not stop him, you know, because, you know, if you stop the creative flow, it's a bit like, you know, you're holding back something that has to come out. And at some point, you know, all artists, you know, I guess to a degree, artists, you know, like therapy. And therapy to them is putting it down to good artists, is putting it down on paper. And some of the best albums we hear are very therapeutic to the artist. You know, I've had artists in the past who almost feel when they go on stage and deliver their songs, it's like an exorcism.
Yeah.
You know, so and Craig is one of those artists.
What are your views on fame?
Fame is very powerful, and I think it has to be used very carefully. And if people use it carefully and control their egos instead of it being the other way around, I think it could be a wonderful thing for people. But some people don't like it. Some people don't want attention. But I think that Fame is an amazing song by an amazing artist called David Bowie.
Is being talented enough in this industry?
Is being talented enough in this industry?
Just made that question up on the spot.
I think you did very well making that up. Is it enough? Well, it's an interesting question because it depends what your expectation, longevity, what do you want out of it? So the answer is it's not a straightforward question.
What if I was so talented, a musical genius, and I came to you and I said, look, I know that I'm really great at what I do, but I have absolutely no desire to be famous. What would you say?
I'd shake your hand and wish you luck on your way.
It's just not possible.
What, to be...
To be extremely talented and then, what, the fame just, you can't slip out of it.
Well, no, I'd say enjoy yourself because by virtue of, if you are extremely talented and you want to perform to the rest of the world, then you're going to be known. And that's fame. But, you know, I think there's different levels of fame. So, you know, I think that, again, going back to your question on fame, you know, it depends what level of fame there is. Do you want to be famous for being, you know, a murderer? Or do you want to be famous for making something or doing something that matters? For me, fame is about doing something that matters. But then, you know, you have people that are sometimes do the red carpets before they're famous and then get famous for doing the red carpet. So fame has changed realistically. I don't consider sort of, there's a lot of things that I wouldn't consider people are famous for the right reasons.